riding in a church on Thomas Street. I'm looking at a bridesmaid and she looking back at me. When the summer sends her last glory, she wants a lift. I back to the hotel and if it...
From Gulfstream Park. A very good Wednesday, race fans. Fountain of Youth Week. It is absolutely, I mean, glorious. Although I will say, we left Albany yesterday afternoon. It was like 68 degrees, and I got down here. It was like 73. So, but it as I've said before, it's a very different. Right. Pretty excited, pretty happy to be down here and get this trip going. There's that great line in Quiz Show, right? I feel like a racehorse whose gate won't open. I 2 weeks, but we did get to enjoy by staying those 2 weeks. Was able to enjoy Lennon's birthday party. So. Right. It's the family. It's the family moments that count. They'll always be right. They'll be. Well, I'm still getting to New Orleans, but, the opportunities will continue on a going basis. So she's only going to be four once. Of course, she'll be five and six, and I'm not sure how much those children's birthday parties, how much they vary from year to year, but that's all right. No, we got a Wednesday get together. Dick Powell's going to join us momentarily. Got an eye, not only an eye on Hong Kong, but. The TV, when I came in, the TV actually was on FanDuel, and they're feeding in. Although here at 9 o'clock, I see that they've just switched to some sport. Dave Grenning! Yeah! Now we're officially, now it's Fountain of Youth Week. I suppose later when we see Welsh. I don't know why. I'm going to be with Dave a lot. We're going to be in Tampa next week. So, anyway, keeping an eye on Hong Kong, but they've just switched over to some sports, whatever. Some sort of, this looks like the NFL draft. I mean, it just doesn't end. anyway, Dick Powell in a little bit, and I watched that seventh race, and I think that... I know that those were entry mates that were headlong to the wire. It was a good race, but it didn't do anything for Dick's pick three. So we'll have to regroup and go after the late double. And also with Dick, you know, one thing I did not get to Monday or Tuesday, and not that it's anything that Dick can really... I mean, maybe you can comment on it as somebody who's very familiar with, you know, the international, platforms and, you know, the world pool and everything. But I received a couple of different requests on Saturday morning from people that were playing Saudi, and there was in the third race, there was a miscue, and they refunded everything in the trifecta pool. And the people who actually bet the try and who hit it, and it involved a big price horse in there, they were mystified and miffed, as you might expect. And there was no immediate answers, and I'm actually surprised that this, maybe I missed it online in terms of public comment. I mean, if this happened in the United States, they literally would have burned down a building. There was a scratch of one of the participants in that third race, and in the Whirlpool system, apparently, and thanks to Joe Longo, who looked into this for me, because I asked, and I had two different, but one person, I'll tell you, Andy Simoff, down here, Andy was at a table with some players, including a young guy who bet that try, and just didn't understand what the issue was. And then I got an email as well from somebody who played. So Joe Longo, in literally his last day at NYRA, Joe is joining Stronach Group, First Racing, First Bet, or maybe the technology department. I haven't heard the details. But Joe Longo poked around and got the answer, which was a scratch of a horse in that race and advance betting that had been done all had to be refunded and basically taken out of the pool, out of the tri pool, any of the pools that the horse was bet. And it has to be done at the source, supposedly. That's the system from what Joe was told. And as a result, they didn't get it all done, so they had to refund everybody in the tries. The Exacta and the Super got paid. The other pools got paid, but the tries jammed up, and they didn't get the money rectified and get the pool adjusted in time. I'll trot out my favorite trite, only in racing, only in U.S. racing. No. The kinds of problems and mistakes and unforced errors, as they say, they happen in every jurisdiction and in every walk of life that involves, a sports adjudication, stewarding, refereeing, whatever. At least the one thing we don't have to deal with in racing, it seems, is players storming the racetrack, as opposed to college basketball. That's not funny. I mean, that situation. It's not the first time that's happened. The storming of the court. there is some storming. There might be some storming of jockeys here and there at various venues, but it only takes the form of catcalls and the boo birds. getting after them. Aqueduct is the best. That atmosphere. And by the way, I didn't get a chance to talk about the trip to Aqueduct much on Sunday. There was a terrific, Sunday afternoon. It wasn't even a Saturday. There was a very good crowd on a chilly day, and of course they're inside, but. There was a very good crowd at Aqueduct on Sunday, and vibrant, and cheering, and hooting, and hollering, and it was the first trip of the year to the Big A. Aqueduct is the only people who malign Aqueduct are people who've never been, and that's 100% true. People in people, in the Midwest and wherever, online. Oh, Aqueduct. You ever been? Well, no, but I hear you hear. Aqueduct's great. It's an urban, old fashioned urban racetrack, and it has its particular charm. I'm going to miss. I mean, we got a long way to go, but I'm going to miss Aqueduct. That's what it'll be. It'll be one of those scenarios. You'll miss it when it's gone. Guaranteed. Let me see about the Valley. Ooh, I should get Dick. Let me get Dick Powell in here. There's only 5 minutes to, I was running around And in fact, I got a fun story. I stopped at Bake Shack in Dania, as I always do, to get donuts for Dave Joseph and the team, the Notes team, and everybody who does such a great job down here. And I've said hello to the owner, Keith, a number of times, just sort of hi. You know, he recognizes me over the years. And we actually I had time to talk to him this morning as I waited for a little breakfast sandwich. And Mike Mayo, it turns out when I talked about the racetrack and you know, being down here at Gulfstream, he brought up Mike Mayo, who he, I guess, has been going for years. And I got the biggest kick out of it. So I'm not the only person recommending Bake Shack, which is in that great stretch, Bake Shack, Jackson's, and Grandpa's. Dick Powell, let's get, let me get Dick. We're running out of time here. And you know, Dick had a single. He was looking to single in the, not single, but two legs, the two horses in the last leg. 278 with 1-3. I'll quickly tell you. 278 with 1-3. And that'll give you at least the punch. Dick Powell, good morning.
Steve, good morning.
That
was pouring rain over here.
Is it? So I got out just in time.
Yeah.
No, good.
Yes, you did. It's supposed
good.
To be 50 mile an hour winds and crazy stuff.
Well, good. I hate to leave Tina adrift, but I can't help it. The work comes first, as they say.
Yes.
That was an exciting, that seventh was a very good race, but not necessarily for the pick three we put together.
No, and the track is playing really slow tonight, so Angus Chung had opened up a big lead on the one outgate, and then here comes the 10. Now, Casper Founds had two in the race. One was favored, one was like 17-1. So here comes the 17-1 up the rail. And was able to win a tight photo. So Casper Founds seems to rule Hong Kong, gets his winner for the night. Karis Deaton riding just terrifically. And the rest were kind of spread out all over the place. It didn't turn out to be that competitive a race other than the top two or three.
Well, we got about 2 minutes to post for the Kwai Chung handicap. Give a quick double synopsis here so we can set it up.
All right, this is a class three. I'm using the two, Joyful Hunter, who's in very good form, but is racing at Sha Tin, but is 2-for-2 at Happy Valley, so it seems to be versatile enough. The four took a tremendous amount of money, Sugar Sugar. I didn't use it, but just be warned, took a lot of money. I didn't use it because it's post 10, so I also used Chain of Gold, number 7, who I also made a win bet on, 4-5-1. And then Denfield from Danny Shum and Zach Purton. This looks like he might be able to work out a Stalker's trip, but I don't know if I want, I don't know if I want to be mid-pack today. I'd rather be in the lead or far back. So 2-7-8 in the first leg, the ninth race. This one looks really tough. I mean, Beauty Infinity probably going to go off around even money for John Size. And Zach Purton missed by a head last time out. Just an emerging four-year-old that's just getting better and better. So I threw him in the double. And I also added the 3 Jumbo Legend as a second horse. If we run 1-2, I can hit both parts of the double, the console as well. And if not, the console might help us out. New Bowman has the rail. So 2-7-8 and race 8 coming up. 1-3 in race 9.
Very good. So 3-by-2, 2-7-8 with the 1-3. We got just a minute or two. Let me go back to the screen. And, they're saying 0, but let's see about the red light. And thanks to Leslie Knopf just gave me the, I guess at 9 o'clock, FanDuel switched over the international coverage to the alternate channel, which, of course, was HRTV at one time. So if you're looking for it on your dial, Tina, when I was I got to the hotel, and Tina had a big, she had a long night at, no, day at school and night, because they had the negotiations and this and that. And so when I got to her about 9 o'clock, she was struggling, Dick, with, I guess, Spectrum shuffled the deck, and you had to do all kinds of new something to the your Spectrum service in Albany. Oh. And she was tearing her hair out. And she's good at that.
Yeah, I've never been on cable here because we didn't have cable for 20 years.
Good point.
By the time they got it, I was already on DirecTV.
Sure.
And then I got rid of that a couple of years ago, and now I use Fubo.
Oh, look at you streaming. With the stick. Yeah. Look at you with the Mr. Technologic sophisticate.
Well, I was into Roku real early. And I remember when NARA set up their Roku channel, Scott Finley, who was working for NARA at that time, would call me, and I would give him my feedback, how's the latency, stuff like that, and they were, like, fine-tuning it. But, yeah, I like Roku, and I had YouTube TV, but I had to drop it because they don't have SNY, which, if you're a Met fan, you got to have SNY.
I'll tell you, you're a glutton, the mother of all gluttons, Metsies and Jetsies. You're, jeez, yikes.
It's called self-esteem issues. I know, but I am loyal. That's one thing. I am loyal.
Well, I've got to start digging in as they load the gate here. We're getting ready for this eighth race at the Valley where it's happy. And we'll talk about the weekend. Of course, the big race. Let's bring this up. A couple more to go. I've been in fantasy baseball literally since its origins, mid-'80s, 84, 85. With two leagues, now just down to one, but I'm just starting to catch up. I really have not paid attention to off-season stuff, to hot stove stuff. Here we go, just about set.
Race 8 tonight. Viva Graciousness, Barrier 1, racing this time, away they go. And Americ Tespexo a little bit slow out, along with One For All, but he's mustering speed and he's piercing through, one off to take the lead, One For All. Ace One out wider, Viva Graciousness on the inside, Denfield and Sugar Sugar deep into the first turn. A length and a half back to Joyful Hunter, who's in the scent. In fact, he's three wide, kicking up in the center is Chain of Gold. Americ Tespexo back on the inside. Eason's gone back to second last, and Captain Win last. One For All down the back of the track, 700 to run. Leads out a length on Ace One second. Viva Graciousness third in the trail. Sugar Sugar next from Denfield, who's just a fraction keen on the rail. Joyful Hunter from A. Americ Tespexo. Chain of Gold, Captain Win, and a length to Eason, the last one. They're on the swing towards the 400 metres. One For All is the leader here for Benny Thompson. Turns it over. Ace One, Viva Graciousness, Sugar Sugar, Denfield, Joyful Hunters, five off the lead. One For All in front. Here's Sugar Sugar, though. He's ranged up now, taking the lead. Back to the inside comes Captain Winnie. He's running on. It's Sugar Sugar in front. Elfie Chan's got a terrific record with Sugar Sugar. Captain Win is coming late, but Sugar Sugar, he delivers again from Captain Win.
Well, and Dick, this is a horse that we've played, Sugar Sugar. And in fact, I think we cashed one quite a while back with Sugar Sugar.
Yeah, and the money was correct. The money, when I wrote down the odds about 8 o'clock this morning, he was 11 to 1. And then when I went back and looked at it, he was 5. I thought post 10 would be a problem. The rider had a winner last week when we were on, Alpha Chan.
Yeah.
Still has a 5-pound apprentice, but he only has 4 wins the whole season. But it's Casper Founds. Casper at Happy Valley is the leading trainer and got a perfect trip, and they were spread out, and then the late closes didn't have any chance of rallying in time. So Sugar Sugar.
493, the photo for the fourth slot. And yeah, this is a good, because the name, of course, makes you think of the Archies. And it just sticks in my head. 6 years old now. And Sugar Sugar. It's one of the fun things about the Hong Kong system. Yeah, the way they acquire horses for the rosters, and you know, invariably they stay around, you know, 3-4 years each.
Well, they're not going off to stud, so we don't have to worry
exactly
about that.
Exactly. You know, that's something actually. I think we talked even before we started. You know, we've been doing Hong Kong probably 7, 8, 9 years now, and I even before that we talked with somebody about the acquisition, about how run that through, Dick, because I think people will find it interesting quickly. The way these horses are essentially, you know, gathered. The Hong Kong Jockey Club is out there, you know, shopping for geldings and for, you know, potential horses to fill the backstretch. I mean, it's one of the things about Hong Kong. People say, our system should be more like Hong Kong. Well, wait a minute. Explain how they do it.
Well, the club goes out and buys yearlings and all over the world, Southern Hemisphere, Britain, France. And obviously, it's a very competitive market. So if you want to buy a horse that's going to fit here, it's going to cost you. In fact, Romantic Warrior, who won the race Saturday night, which I'll talk about in a minute, he cost, I think, $800,000-$900,000 when he was purchased in the Hong Kong sale. So they go out and buy what they can feel well-bred horses, and from top connections, put them up for sale. Members of the club are the only ones allowed to bid on it. And that's part of it. Then the individual members of the club buy horses all over the place. If there's a decent maiden or someone in Australia, someone does looks good, they get purchased. They usually get 6-9 months off, big acclimation, get used to how things are done there. And then they start their racing up through the classes. They're always a little bit, in our world, they're kind of behind because 3-year-olds are very lightly raced. They haven't gone through any kind of T-roll season. If they've had a T-roll season, it was overseas. And usually they're not heavily raced before they get to Hong Kong. And then with Hong Kong, you just got to get through your class system. You start out at class 4, unless you're already a winner. So they work their way up. There's when you look at the form guide next to the horse, you're going to see PPG, PP, and ISG. PPG is a private purchase griffin. That means the horse has never won, never raced in Hong Kong. Private purchase always means the horse had some kind of form overseas, is not making its career debut, it's already raced somewhere. And then ISG is an international sales graduate. They also do a thing. In this last race, they had it available. The 5 and the 7 were eligible. If they won, they would have gotten a Hong Kong bonus of $1,500,000. So that's, you know, 200-something thousand in U.S. dollars. So they get a bonus for competing at the class 3 level. So it's a further incentive to push your horses and move them up in class. And, it's a nice reward. Because if you won this race had a $1.86 million purse. The winner of this race got $1 million. He wasn't eligible for that bonus. He might have already gotten it. And then there's another 1.5 available off the top. So, you can win this race and come out with 2.5 million Hong Kong dollars, you know, 300-something thousand American dollars. That's not bad. So the horses sell well. It is expensive, especially all the time that goes into getting them ready. So they're not, you're not buying them and then getting them on the track and start getting purse checks. But it's a system that works, and it's always fascinating to follow the horses and as they improve and as they move up the class ladder and stuff like that. So then you see pedigrees from the United States, from Europe. I did a story earlier in the year on the pedigree. You can't name a sire that doesn't have a winner in Hong Kong. It's just everywhere. So they're widely sourced, and it's an interesting process. The thing you want to emulate Hong Kong is the administration regulation arm. One group runs the whole thing. The vets work for the club. You know, strict rules. Stewards that knock on wood, know what they're doing. And I have to get used to, you know, watching New York every day. I'm not used to watching races that adjudicated correctly.
Well,
Zing, there's my zinger.
There you
Zing.
Go. Well, and you know, I made. In fact, that's a segue. You can include the, you know, the recap and the preview too. But you know, I brought up that situation from Saturday, and I reached out to you and to Joe Longo about what transpired with the trifecta not getting paid out of Saudi. And you could also, if you want to comment on the results there, feel free. But you know, it just shows you. I mean, here's the most revered organization probably worldwide in terms of, you know, operating capacities and efficiencies, and they made a mistake.
Yeah, but it doesn't look like they made the mistake. It looked like one of the tow companies made the mistake. So it's a challenge to do this.
Of course.
There's a lot of things that can go wrong. And I don't understand why it affected the tri. It didn't affect the other pools. So that's I don't get it. I don't understand that part of it. But I know years ago when me, the aforementioned Scott Finley, and Eddie Panassi, we set up the first international simulcast network in fairgrounds, where we had the contract to do the Dubai Carnival, not just World Cup. So we had the 10 nights of the carnival, and it's scary. I mean, you're trying to anticipate things, and here's the thing: they don't have betting. So okay, who does stop betting? There's not a steward there that's pressing the button and say stop betting. So we wound up pooling the money through South Africa, through Fumalela, and their steward is on the phone with a backup getting the off time. But the minute that he's told they're off, because you can't rely on the TV picture because there's too much latency.
Sure.
In TV pictures, or it could work, but then it goes down. So it was like, wow, there's so many things that can go wrong. I mean, we had a thing, I can't remember if it was the super factor. There was a quirk, because the pools for the carnival were relatively small. There was a quirk that if it doesn't get hit, it carries over to the next race. So if the last race in Dubai didn't have the super hit, it would carry over to the next South African race, because these were the rules of South Africa that we were operating on.
Interesting.
So that gets crazy. Now, this Saturday's races were run under the Hong Kong Jockey Club rules. So when something went wrong, they had to comply with what they have. And yeah, it's a big risk to do this kind of stuff. I mean, there's a lot that can happen. And I feel for the people who had that try and got a refund.
Yeah, well, I heard from two of those people that's exactly what, you know, what prompted the inquiry, you know, to try to find out, yeah, you know, what might have happened, how it, you know, how it came off, how it came to be. How about, and if you want to include your thoughts about the results, the Saudi results, and let's do the other weekend recapping.
Yeah, I thought the breathtaking race for me was the dirt sprint, where Skelly had opened up a clear lead, and Remake down on the inside, you could just see he was locked on that horse four or five lengths behind, and he starts coming and coming and coming and catches him and wins by a length. And it showed you. I spent an hour with Lafitte Pinkeye before he flew over. And oh, that was that, yeah, because I think you gave him my number.
That's right.
Yes. So that worked very well. And what I pitched him on was that the sprint races are going to be at least 2 seconds slow and the distance races are going to be at least 3 seconds slow. That it is a tiring track in the sense that you're not getting your energy back like some tracks. So it's a safe track. Everyone likes it. It's pretty fair. No bias, anything else like that. But Skelly on American track does not get caught. There's no way. But on that track, he just ran out of energy, and this horse was coming and coming and coming. The same thing in the Saudi Cup. I mean, Saudi Crown ran an unbelievable race.
Yes, he did.
He has to race one. And then here comes Senor Buscador. Here comes Ushua Tercero. And he's a tight third, but third's a lot of money. Yeah, you still got a lot of money for third, but you also just left $7 million on the table.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but that showed you how tiring that track could be, and the riders have to be well aware of it and save their mounts. Now, big fields, it's hard to save them because you're going to have pace, things like that. So I thought the dirt races especially were very exciting. Now, speaking of exciting, last Sunday, the City Hong Kong Gold Cup, 1.25 miles, big match between Romantic Warrior and Voyage Bubble. Now, these two have both won the Hong Kong Derby. Romantic Warrior is now 6, Voyage Bubble is now 5. He's been running tremendously, but Danny Shum has mapped out this plan for Romantic Warrior where he took him to Australia. He was 4th in the Turnbull at Flemington, kept him down there, brought him back 3 weeks later for the Cox Plate. Wins the Cox Plate. And you got to be an international fan to understand how big the Cox Plate is. In many ways, Cox Plate is bigger than the Melbourne Cup because it's a weight for age race. It's not a handicap, things like that. So he wins the Cox Plate. Just unbelievable. With the surge at the wire. 5 weeks later, he's back in Hong Kong against Luxembourg, going 1.25 miles. Has to leave. Luxembourg makes this lunge at the wire. Once again, Romantic Warrior wins the photo by 0.03 seconds. Now, come back to last weekend. James McDonald, who's been riding Romantic Warrior, splits horses down on the inside, saves ground. At the 300-meter mark, he's right there, and Voyage Bubble, who's been 3 wide most of the trip, is right there. They battle to the wire. Romantic Warrior won by this time 0.05 seconds. Just to win those 3 races with the travel involved, and there weren't real big gaps in between where you could maybe recover and take a spell and things like that. And it's just remarkable what Romantic Warrior was able to do, what Danny Shum, the trainer, was able to accomplish, and also how good Voyage Bubble is. I mean, he's right at the cusp of being, you know, just one of the leading horses in Hong Kong. I think he's right there. So that was, you look forward to a race, and then they run the race, and it's everything you look forward to. So I wrote a piece on it. It'll be published in a couple of days. But one of the things I talked about at the end of the piece was form lines. And if you go back 2 years ago, California Spangle was kind of the hot horse. And he ran the first leg of the 4-year-old series, and Romantic Warrior beat him. Now, Romantic Warrior was undefeated at that point. So he beats him going 1 mile. Now, you're thinking, well, California Spangle, he's by Star Spangled Band, he's probably not going to stretch out. Well, now they go to the Classic Cup, which, by the way, is going to be run this weekend at 1 mile and 1/8. And he beats Romantic Warrior going 1 mile and 1/8, but kind of shocking. Then they go to the Derby at 1 mile and 1/4, and Romantic Warrior only beats him by a head. So California Spangled is right there with Romantic Warrior and actually has a win over. Comes back the next season, and the big race is in December. California Spangled beats Golden 60. He's the only horse over there that can say, I beat him, and I beat him. Now, Romantic Warrior has yet to beat Golden 60. But he beat California Spangled 3 other times. So, yeah, California Spangled, if you do form lines, you're like, he looks like the key horse, but he's kind of gone the other way. In fact, he's going to show up March 10th there's a terrific Group 1 Chairman Sprint going 7 furlongs with everyone in it. Lucky Spaniel, California Spangle. I mean, just a sensational deal. That's gonna be worth staying up to watch. So Romantic Warrior gets it done. He has 3 wins in a row, and the margin, the total margin's probably about a foot.
Hmm.
But he's game. He's courageous. James just rides him to a T. Danny trains him to a T, and he's, you know, he's not taking any breathers. He's coming back 5-6 weeks off of these monster races, and it just has no effect on him. He just keeps winning. I looked at Golden 60's track work, because he had a slight injury after the December race, and he's been swimming, he's been trotting. The big thing is if he shows up in a barrier trial, because he's scheduled, if he can run, he'll be run the end of April in that grade one then. And that would be great if him and Romantic Warrior could knock heads, but I'm not sure how far along he is and how much more work he needs, you know, to go into a Group One. So that would be great to see, but not sure if we're going to see it. But we will see Romantic Warrior again, and we will see Voyage Bubble again. So that'll be fun to look forward to a rematch.
Excellent. All right, Dick, thank you. Let me get your reaction as well. Dave Groening is going to join us in about 10 minutes to talk about the Hall of Fame release, the finalists that'll be voted upon. And it's an interesting it's an interesting list. In addition to the newcomers, first year eligibility, I'm going to save I'll save the names, we'll go over that with Dave in a little bit. Your thoughts about Heiss's report. I don't know how much of it you waded through, but you have been the go-to authority, essentially, on the history of wet tracks and sealed tracks and their after effect, the aftermath. So I was anxious to hear your thoughts.
Well, I've yet to hear from them. I had reached out to Ann McGovern before the breakdown. I always get his name wrong. Thunder Giant. Was that his name, the one who broke down in the...
I
got a blank spot with his name. He's the one who broke down. Maple Leaf Mellow broke down 3 weeks earlier. Similar circumstances, and compared them to other similar circumstances. No response. Now, here's the crazy thing. That happened on a Saturday. Pretty big story. Who calls me Monday? I spent an hour and a half on the phone with the Gaming Commission. So the Gaming Commission had heard some of the things I had been saying, and they wanted to talk, and they let me go on and on and on. We went off of synthetics, we did this, we did that. So they were great. I've yet to hear from HISA, despite talking about this publicly. I talked to Dr. Stover about this 2 symposiums ago. Didn't get any reaction. So now here you have a report. Yes, it rained. Yes, that's probably a factor. But to me, the factor is how sealed tracks are maintained after they're drying out. That the critical phase, in other words, if it keeps raining, just seal the track. The horses are going to be fine. Problem is when it stops raining, sun comes out. Now you're scratching the surface, and I know I'm going to get pushback on that, but I see it with my own eyes, Steve. That's one reason why I like having seats at Saratoga. I can't be one of these guys who watches all the races on TV. So I watch track maintenance. I watch water and everything else. And just so it's, they never address that. And my fear is they're going to take a bunch of events, and despite them saying we there's no smoking gun, there's no factor that's present in all of them other than Dr. Palmer revealing that 11 of the 12 have deadlock injuries. But now their answer is going to be, well, we're going to push injections back from 14 days to 30 days. So I think that's what they wanted to do anyway. So now they have their reason to do that. So, okay, there's some good to that, but there's also some bad to that. And it's not always a negative thing where a horse gets injected and, you know, some of these things help the horse, help them stay sound and help them stay healthy. Yes, it can get abused, but just keep pushing things back. You know, the theory is, will they ban ice? Will you be allowed to stand in ice the day of a race? How about a cold hose? Will you be allowed to have a cold hose around your ankle the day of a race? I mean, there's a point of lunacy that you can just take this to the nth degree. So I'm sure they're going to do what, you know, go from the 14 to the 30 days. And not really understanding that if you think we have trouble filling races and having horses run back pretty quickly, where do you see when it's 30 days? Not that everyone's getting injected, but it's part of a vet's routine to keep the horse racing sound. So I didn't really see anything in the analysis. And then the you know, when they say, well, we take samples and we send them to Lexington. It's like, I laugh at that. I think, what possible thing could that do? You take you took a grain of sand off the beach and you're going to go examine the grain of sand. Call me skeptical.
Yeah.
And yet the real data is 120.95 seconds. Fastest ballerina in history. You know, that's data. And the horse who broke down, he had run 43 and change in his prior race, run over similar circumstances to his last race. That doesn't count as data. No one sits there and says, wow, dirt races are kind of quick today. Maybe we have a what I call code red.
Well, and I tried to make this point with Alan yesterday, and yes, you know, data points are vital. And in fact, we should mention one thing I should also include, the Mary Scalise equine injury database for 2023 came out, and the numbers continue to go down. I mean, the a near record safe year, and, you know, all you have to do is look at the graphing. Since the equine database was created, and you know, I discussed this with Jim Gagliano last week too. I mean, the story is very positive. At the same time, it's not a story that, you know, that a drum that we need to be banging, you know, publicly. I mean, all we can do is you know, reiterate that every reaction. From, you know, every quarter here, from racetrack practitioners, from horsemen, from, I mean, regulatory vets. I mean, everybody, the absolute, you know, vigilance is getting results. That's all you have to say. And that's the most important aspect. But then to go and try to create an alternate, kind of an alternate dialogue. The thing with the control group of horses, and I'll get some epidemiologist, Dr. Parkin or somebody, to explain the value of this. But I'm sorry, for them to start suggesting that, well, if a horse has worked 16 furlongs between starts, it's too much. Well, what are you doing? I mean, they're trying to regulate horsemanship out of the equation, and it's preposterous. That's
also
a fool's
dangerous.
Errand. Exactly, it's a fool's errand, and it's dangerous. And every single thing that continues to be an attempt, you know, to impugn the horseman. I mean, just. It's just exhausting. I mean, you're going to tell me some regulatory vet knows better than the professional trainer that is in constant contact with their horse. And I mean, is there mistakes and things slip through the cracks, and yeah, they do. They do. But to try to create a parameter that you know is going to manage or control the workouts of how many, you know, how many. I love counting up how many furlongs a horse worked between starts, or you know, when they're getting ready to come back from something. The more, the better. I you know, they're going to be that much tighter from a handicapping standpoint. That one I found bewildering, Dick.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and they're guilty of what I call mission creep. So you create this organization, you have a mission. Okay. How about just staying with that mission? So now they ventured out into jockey mental health and things that I don't think are part of the original mission. You want to be a conduit to help things like that, go right ahead. But it's just like, you have a mission, stick to the mission, get good at the mission. And this concept, and basically it's somewhere along the line, there's a feeling behind closed doors that trainers are a bunch of butchers, and we can't leave anything up to them because they'll push the envelope and hurt the horse. That's what I see.
Yeah.
So with that mentality, these type things are just going to occur more and more. And, you know, it's like with the 2-year-olds. Now, I did see where the 2-year-old breakdowns per 1,000 starters was the lowest of all the groups. And there's a real importance of running at 2 as far as building bone.
No doubt.
If you kept the horse in a stall and just raised him out in the field and said, oh, at 3, we're going to start pushing, yeah, you're not going to have the bone development and be able to sustain, you know, the concussion of running races. And that might be counterintuitive, okay, but it's also true. So, yeah, the 2-year-old racing, there's nothing wrong with it. In fact, it helps. And the other thing, which we were just talking about, Steve, Bart Cummings, who won 11 Melbourne Cups, his theory of winning the cup, which he clearly knew what he was doing, he wanted 6,000 meters of racing to get ready for the cup. He didn't care if it was a 1,400-meter sprint or then going a 1,600-meter mile. Or, you know, he wanted 6,000 meters to have his horse fit. And 2,000 of those meters might have come Saturday, 3 days before the Melbourne Cup on Tuesday. I don't know where they...
The 2-year-old thing is just doesn't ever go away, no matter how many times. And there's been, there is extensive study work on this. And every time there's any question about, you know, not just safety, but just about the, you know, habits and practice of running horses. I mean, one of the real litmus tests is when you see somebody say they should hold the Triple Crown for 4-year-olds and not let them run it. It's like, oh my God, it's just unbelievable. That's one of the things about this. And we're going to talk, by the way, Bo Bromagin, I promised you yesterday, Light Up Racing had their first function on Monday night, and Bo is going to talk about the mission of it and the concept. It came from Australia, where, as the stat that we've thrown out a few times that Ian Wilkes showed to me out of a brochure last year, leading up to Derby, 1 out of every 14 Australians has a share in a racehorse. One out of 14.
Yes.
Every 14. It's astounding. And this light-up racing concept originated in Australia. And essentially, it's public relations. It's a PR vehicle to answer uninitiated individuals. Their questions about the game and about the things that can be somewhat vexing, for us and the things that we're challenged on. So we're going to discuss it with Bo, but this is one of those areas, actually, as it happens. Dick, feel free to stay with us. Dave Grenning, as promised, has come over for a quick 7 or 8 minute hit because he's Dave Grenning and he's handling the Hall of Fame coverage that for decades fell to Jay Pribman.
Yes, in fact, I had dinner with Jay and his lovely bride on Monday night. I got him. Jay will not go without a King visit in 2024.
Unbelievable.
How about that? I got him to come out and picked him up, him and Ann up, and we went to the King.
Did he have an entree or did he have pizza?
He had
both?
Entree. No pizza. I thought he might take a slice to go, but he did not. He had an entree.
He needs to sit. He needs some training on that front. Siaka has the appetizer slice and then the entree.
Well, I didn't think he wanted, he had an appetizer, but it wasn't pizza. And then I didn't think, he was fearful of if he brought a King slice on the LIRR going back, there could have been trouble.
he's not as experienced handling that, although I'm sure he eats in traffic going back and forth from San Diego to L.A.
Yeah, I don't know if that. I don't think that's his style.
You don't see him?
I don't think that's his style.
You and I, though.
Come on.
I can eat an everything bagel in the car without a seed hitting the seat.
That's impressive. I usually get something on me.
Dave, this is a heady Hall of Fame class, but the class will be good no matter what, obviously. But this is a very interesting set of finalists.
Well, you get the holdovers from last year, which, all the trainers that were on the ballot last year are back on. I was very pleased to see Jorge Chavez get on the ballot. I was trying to actually put together something to give to the nominating committee, but luckily there was someone else who was actually on the same page. I didn't get to do that, but this other person did that, and I'm glad that the nominating committee saw fit to put him on. The other jockey, Joel Rosario, who's obviously deserving and probably can even enhance his credentials over time. The two new horses are going to be interesting. You have Justify and Gunrunner. On paper, it looks like they're both slam dunks, but it'll be interesting. I'm interested to see how the Justify thing is handled, given there's still some, concern over the scallop. Palomine issue from the San Diego Derby. I believe that's got reintroduced into the courts again, so that will be interesting, I guess. But he is a Triple Crown winner, and I think every other Triple Crown winner is in there, so I would imagine that he would get in. The interesting group here is the trainers, and one thing I hope your listeners do understand at this point, because I've seen a little some of the responses to me in just the story, and when they looked at the trainers list, was like, wow, that's a tough list. We don't have to just pick one.
No.
There are 17 horses/horsemen.
You could vote for all 17.
You could vote for all 17 or two or zero, whatever. Anywhere from zero to 17, one to 17, I guess, if you're actually making a vote to vote for. So they can all get in. But it's interesting. The trainers are an interesting group. To me, Clement and Motion are almost the same. Their numbers are almost identical. And they each have a classic win. Graham has more Breeders' Cup wins, but Christoph got his a few years ago. So that's an interesting group. O'Neill he's a two-time Derby winner. It's an interesting group. That's kind of interesting that they haven't got that none of them got in last year. I was a little surprised that none of them received enough support to get in last year. We'll see how that plays out.
Let's give a quick rundown for those that haven't seen Dave's coverage and the horses and the first year eligibility horses, Justify and Gunrunner. The rest of the horses, the returnees, Blind Luck, Game on Due, Gioponti, Havre de Grace, Kona Gold, which is inexplicable that he has to come back like this humiliatingly year after year.
I agree with that.
Lady Eli, who for me is a Hall of Famer. Rags to Riches, for me, is not. Those are the horses. The jocks will just be Joel Rosario, first year of eligibility, and Choppy, George Chavez. And then on the trainer front, Christoph Clement, Kieran McLaughlin, Graham Motion, Doug O'Neill, John Sadler, and John Sheriffs. And Sheriffs being a fascinating inclusion on this because he's a modern-day David Whiteley.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair comparison. I mean, you know, the job he did with Zenyatta and the number of, you know, his percentage of in-graded stakes is solid. Overall numbers don't jump out at you in, you know, blink Hall of Fame, but he's done some tremendous work with some of these horses that he is an interesting dynamic.
Explained to everybody the voting procedure and what it'll take to get any of these into the hall and on the agenda for August.
Of the ballots that are returned, a horse or horseman has to receive 50% plus one, so it's majority vote to get into the Hall of Fame. So again, if they get over 50%, they're in. If they get under 50%, they're none.
The package obviously will go to the voters, and in fact, Dick Powell, you're listening in. Dick, did you take up the invitation?
Yes, I did. I got the list, and I'm like, wow, how do you leave anybody off?
Well,
especially the way that, like, you look at Game on Dude, and you look at all these wins, Pacific Classics, Hennedy to Handicap, Hollywood Gold, just unbelievable accumulation of group ones, $5 million back when $5 million, probably $8, $10 million today, and just... and that seems like a Hall of Fame career. So looking at them, I was blown away by just the quality of everybody. I love Chavez. I love Joel. So it's good. It's going to be hard to whittle down.
It's going to be an interesting vote, I think, this year. I really do. Once you start making cases for some, they're almost all fall into the same kind of category. You know, to me, it's sort of like if you vote for Clement, you have to vote for Motion. It's just those numbers are strikingly similar. And, you know, I've been a big Chavez fan for a long time.
I saw you tweeted about Choppy.
I thought he belonged in, like, a long time ago. I was surprised that he's really was only on the ballot, I believe, one other time. I think
2006.
2006, I believe. So, I was a little surprised by that. I mean, you dominate a circuit like he dominated New York for that six-year period. That's pretty impressive. And then you know he's got a couple Breeders' Cup wins. He's got a Derby, and ridden several champions. And I don't know. You know, again, we vote on a lot of things in this game without real criteria. But in an era now where people are always seem to be criticizing whether a jockey gives an all-out effort, there was never not a time to me that Chavez didn't give an all-out effort. And I do think the whole chop thing's a little bit overblown. You know, it was a lot of whip snapping, not so much whipping of the horse. It just his motion, because he was so small, it looked like he was wailing on. And I'm not saying he would have had a little difficulty adjusting to the six strike rule. I will say that, but he was not. He did not abuse. I will say, I don't believe he abused horses with it. I just think he was always trying. He was an aggressive rider. Yes, you know, he used the stick as legally. But I don't, you know, I know he got that nickname, but I just think it was his motion more so than his actually hitting up, beating up a horse.
He gave the fans their money's worth every time he got on a horse.
Yes.
And I mean, what I compared it to him years ago was Manny Kazzer. Manny Kazzer was just beloved by New York fans. Always gave his best and try. And George just didn't matter the race. He's going to get the A-plus effort out of him.
The problem Chavez is going to have, there's a certain group of voters, part of this voting block, that didn't really see George ride, And I mean, if Craig Perrett had to fight and sit waiting for the call, it's going to be very hard, I think, for George.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know the answer to this. And was Perrett in at a time when this voting system was in place, where he 50 plus one, or was it when you had a girl?
He's been in every one. He's been in every
right,
style.
But he got in.
This, yeah.
When did he get in under 50 this?
50 plus one.
50 plus one, okay.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when it was choose, you know, one from column A, one from column B.
Which was nuts.
You know, I know that he had difficulty, I think he had difficulty getting in at that spot. So that's the thing. I mean, you have a lot of individual, everybody's got an individual criteria, and it'll see, we'll see how it shakes out. But it's a group. It's a good group. I would hope that there's a healthy size class going in.
I would think.
But, you know, a lot of, again, you know, 13 of these were holdovers from last year. So they didn't get in last year. I don't know how close, you know, I don't believe they released the totals like I think sometimes they do in baseball. Like if you reached, you know, what do you have to get 75% in baseball? And some people, they'll tell you if you got 67 or 72. I don't know how close.
I don't think Brian releases.
They don't do that.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think we know how close any of them came.
Right.
To getting in. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it moves forward.
Well, and typically I'm in Kentucky when we have the announcement. It'll be 11 o'clock on a Monday or Tuesday of either Derby week or
I think it's the week before. I think it's April 23rd.
Yeah, it's always.
It used to be Derby week. It used to be the Tuesday of Derby week, and they'd actually bring the people into the Churchill the press box, which is now the mansion. It's not the Churchill.
Right.
And, yes, they would do it that week, and now it's, I think, the week before that, and it's just done via press release. Not even sure there's a conference call, like you know. So
the year that Steve Asmussen was elected, Steve came over and sat with me, and we had an unbelievable, you know, this is your life.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a very humbling experience for him and the family, and you know, the history of the game is so important to Steve that, you know, I'm sure that was a very special.
Without a doubt. We're gonna have to compare. You know, Rosario has been a bit of a lightning rod of late, for whatever reason. I've never seen a guy so successful that is attacked on a going basis. I mean, and he can be streaky, but the Rosario portion of this is interesting with George, and then on the horse front, I mean, I the Kona Gold situation is bizarre.
Yeah, I don't quite get that either. Like, why it's so hard for people to view him as a Hall of Fame horse?
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, he should have gone in when Alex Elise went in. That was the opportunity, and that's like almost ten years ago.
Well,
believe it or not. Well, and I'm sure Dick is. This is Dick's first year voting, and it'll be.
That's another thing, you know? Too. Like I don't really know who votes on this anymore. You know, I really don't. You know, in the Eclipse Awards, I know there's the Turf Riders,
the
and
blocks.
The Daily Racing Forum, and the NTRA. I don't know who votes. You know, there aren't many writers left covering the game. And I'm not talking, you know, there's the Forum, and there's Blood Horse, and TDN, and Pollock Report, but there's, you know, who's the legacy media, I guess, the mainstream media, who's out there left?
It's a combination.
And are there other, like, do the Hall of Famers vote? I really don't know who's. I don't know how many ballots are out there. Are there 100 ballots? Are there 200 ballots? I don't know.
I think it is in the three digit range.
But is it low three digits? Is it like I don't know.
Yeah, I want to say 120, 130.
And they're all
industry participants.
I don't.
From
that's,
varying
boy, that's
degrees.
That's a very vague term, Steve. I just saw an industry participant walk out the door here. I don't know if she's security or horseman's relations. She's an industry participant.
No, that's great. You know, we probably spend more time on this than you probably need to at certain points, but there's some very interesting debates, and there's two horses, two of the you know, nice filly mare types that are involved here, Havre de Grace and Rags to Riches, who to me had, well, Rags to Riches had a unique, you know, accomplishment that people want to put her, elevate her into the Hall of Fame. It was a unique and historic accomplishment. She falls short. Havre de Grace, horse of the year. Yeah, horse of the year in just a absolute, you know, desert of a season. I can't vote for her.
Her and Blind Luck are kind of similar. Well,
Blind Luck has a little bit deeper resume from ages 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to look at her. But I tend to agree with you on Rags to Riches and Havre de Grace. I mean, Rags to Riches had an accomplishment that earned her a championship, and that's what that accomplishment deserved. Okay. I don't know that it's there. I would have liked to see her do more. I guess I would have liked to see her do more.
I suppose it happened a little bit late, and I never reached out to Brian. I did wonder fleetingly if it was too late to waive the first year of eligibility rules for Echo Zulu, because she, as we discussed, and of course David Fisk certainly feels that way. But I mean, until you look at her resume, you don't realize how much of a Hall of Fame career she had.
I tend to think that this probably happened after their meetings,
after it was formed.
I'm not on the nominating committee, but and I don't know exactly when they held their meeting, but I would think that this probably happened after that. That maybe something they can revisit next year.
Dave, we'll probably catch up with you on Friday. Maybe you and Mike sit in, and then I can use that picture from the Saratoga paddock. Of you holding the mic for Mike. Quick thoughts about Saturday leading up here?
Well, I mean, we're waiting for the speakeasy camp, I guess, to decide whether they're running Friday or Saturday. Mike spoke to Todd yesterday or the day before and wasn't getting a feel for which spot they were going to go in. I think we're all interested to see Door Knock and Locked make their debuts. I mean, you know, Door Knock has sort of worked his way up to the top toward the top of the leaderboard on certain top 10, whatever Derby things for inactivity, right? You know, he hasn't participated yet, so we don't know. Our last, you know, view of him was winning the Remsen. Now, what has played in his favor is the Remsen has proven to be a productive race with Sierra Leone and Drumroll Please, even Domestic Product, who ran up the track in that, came back and ran a very good second here. So he's gaining momentum based on that. We have, you know, no one's really seen, we haven't seen him much. He's only worked 5 or 6 times. I'm a little bit the same with Locked, although Locked was a Grade One winner, was the favorite in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and ran a respectable third. So he's up there as well. So it's going to be fun to see those two finally get on the racetrack. In New York, the Gotham's going to draw a hodgepodge of horses. It looks like it will not be overfilled. I think they'll border on 13 or 14.
So will the maiden run?
He will not. I was told he was not coming.
Deodoro
is not sending that horse. So it looks like, you know, from what I can gather, you know, I'm trying to find out about Antonio Venice because I don't think Rudy wants to run, but he might get overruled by other owners. So I think everyone who wants to run will get to run, even if it'll be like last year. Last year, if you remember, 15 did enter.
That's right.
There was a scratch, and even ironically, Gargan got in with a horse off the AE list this year. Now he's going to run the favorite or second choice in a graded, you know, in a key Derby prep in the first weekend of March. So just how things kind of evolve. I guess just a touch. Is going to be the favorite in the Gotham.
Just a touch will win by 8 lengths.
You win by 8 lengths. Wow.
Just a touch.
You're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Just a touch.
You have drunk. You have. You're going to break through the wall here in this little lounge that you're in.
I am Jim Jonesing this 100%.
Wow. Just 8 lengths.
Just is going to in a canter.
Wow.
He's cantering home.
So 1 6 furlong race in the slop translates to an 8-length win in the Gotham. Okay.
But then the decision, then the tough decisions are going to have to come. What happens? What happens from? Let's get through Saturday.
Okay.
But let me use a Jay Privmanism. Won't lose.
Okay.
The rarely trotted out won't lose.
I think this is more Mark Messier, Joe Namath-esque than Privman-esque. this is impressive.
I would love when Jay trotted out won't lose. There would be a pregnant pause, and then he would say, won't lose.
Sounds like the, go back to the 1994 Breeders' Cup sprint when I ran into Frank Alexander in a gas station mart where he was buying ice, and I was asking him about Cherokee Run, and he just looked at me and said, bet it all. and that was the lead to my, I said, can I use that? He said, yes. So Greg Gallo loved that. He loved that. Bet it all, he said. Paid eight and change. 8.3, 8.10, 8.70, something like that.
Still when, spending that money.
Yeah. So takes me back to that. Bet it all, says Steve Bick on Just a Touch. Who I keep calling Just a Star because everyone's got me thinking. I don't know why. Just a Star. I've written his name as Just a Star, Just a Start. They're going to have to change his horse's name, or I'm going to change it for him because I can't. Just a Touch does not.
It's not working for you.
Doesn't work for me.
Well, it should be fun. And what else do we have on beside the Gotham?
Busher, where you get Jody's Pride. So
nice.
She's up there. And also, one little note: Castle Chaos, who was entered in the race here, he's in New York. He's going to run the Stymie. He's not going to run in the Gulfstream Park Mile. So,
oh, thank you.
You can
look at you, because he was a player in the
course
mile.
Of course he was.
Wow. So
he's going to run in the Stymie at Aqueduct.
This is the reason the racing form is $11, because there's boots on the ground, finger on the pulse, microphone in the face, Dave Grenning.
I thought it was $12. But
See, this is why we go on the road, Dave, because there's it just does, you can't recreate this on the phone.
Absolutely.
We can, but it's more fun in person.
Right.
And I heard Dick Powell chuckling. So is Dick even still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
All right,
listening.
Good. All right. So
I'm enjoying this and learning. And I always, Dave's down there, so I always want to hear what he thinks about the Fountain of Youth and all those stake races and stuff. Yeah.
Well, and Dave and I will be together in Tampa, and looking forward to that. Dave is not...
20 years since I've been in Tampa.
20 years.
At least. Wheelaway won the Tampa Derby when I was there.
So. With Mig?
Yeah. The funny thing is, just a quick story. So the way I remember it, I mentioned this to Mig the other day when I saw him, that I was going down here and going to Tampa, and he had won that horse. He had won that race, and he told a story about him and John driving back from Tampa to this part of the world, the East Coast. And I sort of remember, maybe one of us is remembering it wrong. I thought John was skiing in like Colorado, and we had to call him on the phone to get post-race quotes on the race. So when Mig told me that, when they drive him back and they were talking about what to do next, I was like, boy, I don't remember it that way. I remember having to call John on the phone going, because I remember saying I came all the way to Tampa and have to call a guy on the phone.
That's funny.
But I could remember it wrong because, that does happen.
Well, if Rich, if you're listening, you've got another chance to clarify so that Dave can issue a correction 20 years later.
There you go.
Then we're going to have fun. We're going to get you to Christino's and we're going to a ball game.
Yep.
Is that still good?
That is good.
All right. Dick, I appreciate it. I probably had more for you, but now we're in trouble. I got to get to Sid Fernando and Bo Bromage.
Get going, Steve.
All right. See, I'm eligible for. And Dave said
you had a four. You need a 4-hour show.
It's unbelievable.
But you know what? You're like the highway that they keep expanding. If it goes from 3 lanes to 4, there'll still be traffic.
It doesn't matter.
If it goes from 3 hours to 4 hours, you'll still be up against it.
I'm the Van Wick of radio shows.
You're the Belt Parkway.
Dick Powell, HKJC. Right. Thank you, buddy.
Talk to you next week.
You got it, Dick. We'll be coming to you from Tampa, actually, next Wednesday. Dick Powell, this was a lot of fun. Dave Grenning, everybody. And you know what, Casey, I think we should take the break here. Should we take the break here? Or should we, this is a very tough question. Casey says, yes, take the break here. The music starts up, and so, Dave, you can't leave just yet. Take the stick mic. Let me see. What else is there for you? Any thoughts on the Saratoga report from HISA? Did you go through it at all? Loaded question.
Yeah, I mean, so it's like every other report on fatalities. There's a myriad of factors that played into it. Weather and a turf course that probably shouldn't have been used. And, you know, I don't know. I'm gonna get myself in trouble here. I kind of chuckled yesterday at the release regarding the fatality rate.
Good.
Where
right here.
What's the gentleman's name? Tim
Parkin, the epidemiologist.
Yes, Tim Parkin. When it said that there was a 5.5% increase,
not statistically significant.
What if it went down 5%? They'd be trumpeting it from Maine to Spain. I just kind of chuckled at that. I said, of course it's not. Of course, when it goes up, it's not statistically significant. When it goes down, it's the greatest thing.
A momentous accomplishment.
Yes. I thought that was the most. I'm glad I didn't go. I'm glad I was flying when I came out and didn't go on Twitter and say something stupid. But I guess I'm doing it now. But I just thought that was the most disingenuous comment I could ever see. Because I know next year when it goes down, if it goes down, hopefully it goes down and by the same percentage, Tim Palkin will have something else to say.
Well, and
what did I said his name wrong?
Parkin.
I'm sorry. Tim Parkin will have something else to say about.
Well, he's got the accent, so. You know, that lends gravitas. No, Tim Parkin's terrific. The number ticked up a tiny bit, but this is that downward trend, and there's always going to be blips. And it's what is so vexing about the carrying on, because it's partially random. There are things that can be addressed to try to create an atmosphere so that the minimal amount of incidents occur, but you're not going to stop it completely. But overall, when you look at the trend, it's completely downward and very encouraging, and we have a great story to tell. We can tell it, but we don't need to broadcast it and wave our hands at it.
When you start pounding your chest, something happens to make the chest pounding go away. And you just have to be, you know, be thankful that it's going in the right direction.
Exactly.
And be ready to react and be proactive when it starts to go in the wrong direction. Like
exactly.
Last summer.
Well, had this conversation last week with Jim Gagliano. We've learned from every single incident and spike, and instead of peeling onion layers, you're building layers, and with every set of circumstances, we've gotten better and better and better. And just the fact that we started keeping close track, it's only in the last 15 years.
Right.
The industry went two centuries without even thinking about it. So we're headed in the right direction. We're headed toward a break. On the other side, Sid Fernando, Sirewatch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. We're live at Gulfstream with Dave Grenning. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
PA Bread, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Caravelle in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
We're racing 2-year-olds in California and Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in